out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radioarian.com.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday, the 24th of May, 2018. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks. As it's Thursday, we're going to be getting into a bit of geopolitics today, and who better to do that with than Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. Matt, how are you doing today?
Oh, I'm hanging in there. Yeah, this is very bad. Our topic today is very bad, but very interesting.
Yeah, it's all kicking off. The summit, the peace meeting that was going to happen between Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un, that has now collapsed. And it's Donald Trump that called it off. And they're saying it's because of the way that Kim Jong-un has been speaking about Donald Trump. But as far as I can see, Kim Jong-un has bent over backwards to appease America. He's just blown up his nuclear facilities. He's flown journalists in. He flew a journalist in from RT to record this and document this. So he's done that. He's released hostages. He came to an agreement with President Moon from South Korea. They both came to an agreement that there would be no more provocations. And when they came to that agreement, which was right at the beginning of all these talks, I said, I bet Kim Jong-un's interpretation of what provocations are is different to what American provocations are. And I thought then, as soon as the next military drill happens between South Korea and America, Kim Jong-un is going to take that as being a provocation, because it is. It's a drill for invasion. And sure enough, a week or so ago, they did. They have staged a mock invasion of North Korea. I mean, that is an absolutely blatant provocation. And then you've got John Bolton saying, well, the model we want for the peace with North Korea is the Libyan one, which ended with Colonel Gaddafi being buggered and butchered by Islamic radicals. And then you've got Mike Pence, who's echoed this. And as far as I can see, the North Koreans have been very, very measured about this. They've been very placid about this. All they've said is that Mike Pence is stupid and ignorant for saying that. And that could just be a matter of interpretation. You know, it could just be that they are interpreting this for the rest of the world, the American interpreters, as the most inflammatory language they can think of. Because it may be, you know, common to call people stupid and ignorant in Korea. You don't know, or what the actual wording was that he used. But that's not worth falling out over and cancelling this. And I don't really know what to make of it, other than it does make America look very, very bad indeed. And, you know, they're the ones that have broken the deal by continuing to provoke them. And Kim Jong-un, I think, did a very good thing by making these gestures, handing over the hostages, blowing up his nuclear facility. And the journalists that had to go over there, they were in a complete radio blackout as well. They didn't know where they were going. They were in trains with blacked off windows. And sure enough, he's blown this facility up. And now Donald Trump is saying, well, we're not going to bother with it. And he's making threats again. He does seem very much of a warmonger to me, this president of yours, Matt. What are you thinking about it?
Well, in the beginning, you know, I was respectful of Trump's effort in running for president, but I did say that he doesn't really know anything about international politics or politics in general. He's a businessman. He's a backdoor guy. That was a poor metaphor. He was a backdoor deal sort of guy. This is what he's used to: girls and money and beauty pageants. This sort of thing is beyond his ability. And now he has Pence, who was a local governor, and Bolton, who is as ignorant as they come. They have this ideology of, you know, America number one. I mean, the mock invasion was called Max Thunder. You know, this is kind of mentality that these people have. I firmly believe, just, you know, quickly going through some of the material in the New York Times, that Pence and Bolton deliberately derailed this. Trump wouldn't have on purpose. He already had the medal struck. He was told he may get a Nobel Peace Prize for this. His reputation would be solidified forever. No way he would do this on purpose. So Bolton and Pence may have, and others may have said just the right thing, knowing exactly what's going to piss off the North Koreans. And what they said was deliberately stupid, because the evil way that they dealt with Gaddafi, as you say, is exactly the implication, as Kim has done very well for himself. And Trump has recognized this. I have the feeling that Trump is extremely angry at Pence and Bolton and many others for this. And so you have, as of today, you have the Americans saying that the Russians shut down the Malaysian airliner in 2014, killing all those people. So that's a provocation for war over there. Situation with China in the South China Sea, and now provocation for war in Korea. What's going on here is the neocons have purged the military. They've purged the Pentagon yet again, and they have their people everywhere, and they're planning on plunging this country into a war, which it cannot win, but it certainly will benefit the 1% who even the 1% is watching some of their holdings decrease in value. They're stripping the American economy, and even that's coming to an end. And I think that's the long term, or at least the medium term game here. So I firmly believe that Bolton and these guys tried to deliberately derail this. That's my opinion.
Yeah, that's the impression I get, that Donald Trump really wanted this to succeed. As you say, he'd had the medal struck, and apparently right up until a couple of days ago, he was saying, well, you know, this is still going to go ahead. And I got the impression that these military drills for invasion, their excuse for continuing to do them was just that we had them scheduled. These drills are scheduled 6 months ago or a year ago, so we couldn't stop them. So it would have been the military that carried these drills through and made up the excuse that we can't stop them now because they were already started a long time back. So it does seem to me as if there are people that want to keep North Korea as the enemy, as the bogeyman, obviously because it means that there's got to be more military expenditure. It does make more money for the military. They've just been saying now that South Korea is going to have to pay for all this, all the defenses that are there, and it means that America have got this base in South Korea. If they don't have North Korea as a threat, then there's no real reason for them being there. I just feel sorry for Kim Jong-un. I think he's behaved, you know, I think he's done really well, especially in face of all those sanctions, to come out with a nuclear deterrent to ensure that he's not invaded. And then he said, well, look, you know, we're on the same standard as you. You need to treat us as equals now because we have equal weapons. And I'd like to talk about denuclearizing the place and try to make peace with South Korea. I mean, all the guy wants to do is bring his country back together again. They are nationalists. They are, you know, they're extreme ethno-nationalists, the North Koreans are, and they just
and they want South to be back as well. With their South Korean government always has been.
Yeah.
But remember, Kim doing that, remember, Kim is still considered a kid by a lot of the military and a lot of the older bureaucrats. He has angered the hardliners in his own government by doing what he's done over the last few weeks. So Kim has sacrificed a lot to make this happen. Trump said, I think it was 3 days ago, this is a 99.9% certainty. So for him to say, if to pull out like this, and you know, the Americans aren't in any position to be actual wounded here. The American media, the American government have been mocking Kim, calling him the most ridiculous names, the propaganda machine in North Korea, because no one really knows anything about it. So Johnson's law is operative here. And so this is clearly a pretext. I wonder if Trump got the impression that had this took place, that his own team wouldn't have supported him the way he wanted. And if they weren't going to get their way this way, they would have said and done things during the talks that would have embarrassed him. And I'm wondering, you know, but saying just a couple of days ago, this is a certainty, and then doing this now over name calling, suggests that Trump knows something we don't. And I'm just wondering if he's being told that his own team is going to be doing its own thing, if in fact these talks took place.
Well, I've seen some footage of Mike Pompeo talking to Kim Jong-un, and they seem to be getting on quite well. They seem to be quite amicable, shaking hands, waving, and then suddenly you get this. So it does seem as if there are some that wanted this to succeed, and there are others that didn't want it to succeed. And just going back to actual Kim Jong-un himself and the way that the media mock him, I think he cuts quite an impressive figure. He seems to me like an archetypal mongoloid. You know what I mean? Not an offensive way, but as in quite an archetypal representation of his race. And he should be, you know, he is the king of the Koreans, and he looks like that. He carries himself like that, Yeah, like how you'd imagine an emperor, or you know, like, because I mean they worship him pretty much, and he cuts this overbearing figure, somebody who is worthy of respect and authority. You know, I really did hope that he was going to get to talk to Trump, because I do think both of them have got must have a certain amount of respect for each other. Trump must have respect for what he's done. It's a shame, anyway. It is a shame, and obviously we'll keep following this. But I know you wanted to also talk about this this Brook missile and the downed jet that was shot down over the Ukraine that was in the news in 2014, and apparently this is now back in the news again, and they're blaming Russia again, but they still have no evidence for this whatsoever. And I've got a quote here that you sent me, Matt. I'll read that out, and then you just point out the issues with this, because there are multiple issues with it. A missile system from the 53rd Anti-Aircraft Brigade of the Russian Armed Forces was used to shoot down Malaysian Airlines Flight 17 over eastern Ukraine in 2014. Prosecutors investigating the disaster said on Thursday the airliner was hit by a Russian-made missile on July 17th, 2014, with 298 people on board, two-thirds of them Dutch, over territory held by pro-Russian separatists. All aboard died. The Buk missile system that was used came from the Russian army, the 53rd Brigade, Chief Dutch Prosecutor Fred Westerbeek told Reuters. We know that was used, but the people in charge of this Buk, we don't know. Investigators appealed to the public to come forward and help identify members of the crew who operated the missile and determine how high up the chain of command the order originated. The Russian Federation didn't help us in providing the information we brought out into the open today, Westerbeek said. They didn't give us this information, although a Buk missile system from their military forces was used. Well, Matt, if this was an investigation, you would have thought this would have been all over the news. I mean, the way this is being portrayed is if they've just done this investigation and it's all come to light, they've got the evidence, they even know exactly what group it was, the 53rd Brigade that shot this airplane down. But where is the evidence? We've got no evidence. And as far as I'm aware, they haven't just done this investigation. So what's this all about, Matt? Why are we suddenly being told this now? I thought this was done, you know, a year or so back.
So did I. It's not an accident. This is released on the same day of the cancellation of the summit. It's two sides of the same coin. Every sentence that you read there is false. I read the investigation. There is no technical analysis. It's mostly quotes from the Washington Post and from the internet. That's number one. Number two, they have no idea what brigade shot this thing. They make no reference to any radar data. You can't discover that from the records of a plane. They could have said the 104th Naval Squadron. It sounds specific. And it sounds like they know. So I have no idea. Every country in the area uses a Buk missile system. In 2014, the pro-Russian rebels didn't have anti-aircraft batteries. They were just forming themselves. They didn't have this under their control at the time. The region which allegedly was shot from, and there's no radar evidence whatsoever showing a missile coming in from that area, that was going back and forth between Ukraine and the Russians anyway. the pro-Russian rebels anyway. So they're talking to a world that doesn't know anything about this topic, and they could pretty much say anything. The investigation, again, it's run by a local cop in a small town in the Netherlands. The other lie is the first day, the day that the plane crashed, Russia sent to NATO and the European Union floods of information of its own radar, not saying, look, nothing came from our side. They sent the original documents, and the Dutch said, oh, we can't read these. We don't read the file format. So the Russians resent it. They said, oh, no, but we still can't do it. Sorry. They even sent detailed instructions how to open the file, the asterisk format it's in. It's the name of it. I'm sorry. They you know, a NATO country like the Netherlands certainly can read these. And the United States, for its part, will not reveal where its data comes from. So everything this man said isn't true. The Russians just flooded. In fact, they overloaded the Dutch with information. New Zealand, Spain, Australia, that lost, I mean, about 20 people on that plane, all say this is all nonsense. The National Security Advisor in New Zealand said that it could not have been Russia, and that the Dutch are lying about not being able to open the file. The Dutch Supreme Court forbade this to be published because it's not, you know, the organization putting it together has no right to do it. The Chicago Convention says that when you have a disaster like this, the country that it happens within is in charge of the investigation. That would have been Ukraine. Well, this didn't happen. NATO took over and gave it to the Netherlands. And it just so happens that this plane was carrying almost all Dutchmen. So how could it possibly be given to the victim country to investigate this? So every sentence this man said is false. But the biggest, and this goes on, every issue we talk about here, we end up saying the same thing. What does Russia have to gain here? What do the forces of Nova Russia have to gain here? Even if they had the capacity to do this, what in heaven's name is shooting down a plane full of Dutchmen have to do with anything? Well, they want to be invaded. They want to be hated by everybody. There is not a shred of reason for them to do this, even if they had the capacity. Now, I must have read 100 newspaper articles just over the last couple of days on this topic. Not one of them asked why they would do this. What motive did they have? And that can't be a coincidence. They're avoiding the question. And so whether it be in Korea or in Ukraine, the West is looking for a total war against the Shanghai Cooperation Organization and nationalism in general. For someone like me, whose father lost his left hand and left rib cage in the Korean War, to side with North Korea here and make North Korea seem even vaguely sympathetic is saying something. But that's how rotten the system has become. The Great Depression in 1940, 1941 wasn't going anywhere. It was deepening. World War II was total war, meaning the federal government took over the entire economy, and the economy exploded. And that's what seems to be happening again. You're going to have another total war with most of the world, and the American economy could be taken over yet again by an oligarchy like it was under FDR. Now, of course, there's no constitutional authority for the government to do this, but last I checked, the Supreme Court doesn't have any armies. So I think the regime, its medium-term strategy is a war is the only way to save the damn economy. This was the same thing in 1941.
Well, there are aspects of this that we keep seeing, aren't there? And you point out there, what do Nova Russia have to gain by doing this? And it's the same with the accusations that are thrown against Bashar al-Assad. What does Assad have to gain by gassing the last few remaining terrorists in that part of Syria? He obviously has nothing to gain from doing that. It was deliberately done to make it look like it was Assad. And then we've got the fact that the Russians have provided evidence here, but they've been told that they can't use it. And every time there is a UN resolution to do some investigations in Syria about the gas, we are told, oh, the Russians have vetoed it. But it's not that simple, because every time the UN has said we're going to do investigations into what's happening in Syria, the investigation has been to prove that Bashar al-Assad did it. It's never been to actually investigate to find out who it was that did it. It's always been an investigation to show that who it was. They've already decided who was guilty. That's why Russia vetoes it. And it's exactly the same with this Skripal poisoning. Russia have offered to help out with this, but they've said, oh no, you know, we can't have that because we've decided that you're guilty already. So we can't follow the rules. We can't have neutral countries and the countries that are signed up to the Chemical Weapons Convention investigating this, because we've already blamed you for it. So we've got this thing where Russia is not allowed to enter any evidence. And this, I think, goes back to a precedent that was set with the Nuremberg trials, where you had the so-called victims standing in judgment. And that's what you've got here. You've got the Dutch, who are the victims of this, that are mounting this investigation and making all these allegations and not using Russia's evidence. And this seems to be a trend that we've had with our justice system since the Nuremberg trials. It's the same in the family courts. Fathers are not allowed to put forward any evidence. It's already decided that their evidence is not going to be worthy of even looking at. It carries no weight whatsoever. And they've already decided that the kids are going to go to the mother. So this all seems to go back to the Second World War with the justice system, where victims can stand there as judges and juries. And now added to this, we've got this, well, Russia is the one that we're going to go against, and we're going to ban them from providing their own evidence. And this is just amazing that the Dutch were the people that are actually killed in this, and yet they are the ones that are saying, well, we've done this investigation, we've got our results, but we haven't actually got any evidence. And then they appear to be reissuing this today for some reason.
There's no new information here. That's the thing. There's nothing new discovered. Just as an aside, you mentioned the family court system. Well, I won in my case, and I did it by representing myself. My ex-wife had two lawyers, and I wiped the floor with them. Having a lawyer would have been a disaster. Representing yourself is a different matter. Now, the problem we have here is, as you say, it's already been decided. You don't need a Security Council resolution to do an investigation into this. It's been done by other countries, Spain included. You think of the Srebrenica alleged massacre in Serbia. The Spanish did their own investigation with EU money and said nothing happened here that wouldn't happen in a normal war. And it's just ignored. It doesn't make any difference. The lies here, and the prosecutor that you quoted here is lying through his teeth. Now it gets worse than that, because Ukraine, which of course is just a satrapy of the US, has filed a terrorism suit following precisely the Nuremberg precedent at The Hague, bringing Russia to heel, suing them at The Hague for this terrorist activity. Ukraine is doing it, which just means this is a way that the US can do it by proxy. So that's war from the back door, so to speak. It's a separate way to declare war without actually declaring war, using an American puppet to bring this suit saying Russia is officially a terrorist state. And well, if that's the case, then American policy is war. And so you have violations all over the place, but you also have, as we talked about in the Korean case, the agreement between North and South Korea and the U.S. said that there'll be none of these war games. They're finished. And they did them anyway. You know, in the Korean case, you don't have a unified American government. You have an executive branch that is broken up into factions. The one place where apparently everyone's in agreement is in Ukraine. So war is going to come one way or the other. It's either going to be North Korea, China, which is a separate issue, or this way. And they're using every conceivable legal and illegal method to bring the U.S. into total war against the rest of the planet. And sure, Putin has to be in charge here, because he knows how to play this game a lot better than Trump does. And that's the only thing, that he's the only person who's keeping the world from burning up. So all of these things are connected, including even the family court issue, because evidence doesn't matter, reason doesn't matter, thought doesn't matter, logic doesn't matter, power matters. And the power of the oligarchy, which is the regime that we talk about, and I've dedicated my life to trying to expose. It's all connected.
Yeah, they no longer think they have to actually provide any evidence. They just tell us what to think, and we're expected to go along with it. But people aren't going along with it, obviously. One of the questions that I have about this is, what is Malaysian Airlines doing flying a passenger jet over a war zone in the first place? And surely the permission for doing that must have come from Ukraine, because it was flying over Ukraine airspace and it was a war zone. What are they doing flying passenger jets over a war zone? And what is Ukraine doing allowing that to happen? You know, it doesn't matter who it was that actually shot the plane down. The fault lies with who it was that allowed the jet to fly over that airspace. And if I remember rightly at this time, I mean, as you say, all the countries around have actually got Buk missiles. And this anti-aircraft missile was seen on the back of a trailer moving about that area, moving from between the pro-Russian held areas and the Ukraine areas at the time. And the Russians don't actually have Buk missiles. These are older anti-aircraft missiles, aren't they?
Yeah, they
were sold to Ukraine. It was Ukraine that actually had these obsolete missile systems, and the other countries when the Soviet Union fell apart. But they're certainly not in use by Russia today. They have high technology. They wouldn't be using them.
You're right. That's an excellent point. First of all, when this occurred in 2014, that was the first question Russian Foreign Ministry asked. Is why is the airline over here? Now, and the response was, well, there is no air war. This is simply a ground conflict, and therefore we thought it was safe, but it did come from Kiev. Think of the USS Lusitania before World War One. I mean, they knew there was a wolf pack there. They were sent right into it, right off the coast of Ireland. So the thing would be sunk, and then you have this cause of war. I'm seeing Lusitania here, and by Ukraine's or the U.S.'s bringing this so-called terrorism suit, of course, it's symbolic, but it is a declaration of war. That's the main issue. But Ukraine, and now the second issue is, I at the time, going over the Russian language material, I knew exactly what the Nova Russian groups had. They did not have anti-aircraft capacity at the time. No matter how old, this wasn't an air war at all. They were just forming themselves. The riots had just ended. They were just barely in formation. Yes, Russians were not using Buk missiles. Russians were not even aware of what was happening in eastern Ukraine. These groups had just barely formed at the time. They didn't have anti-aircraft missile systems. If anything, they were using shoulder-based thing, but there was no air war here. They had no reason to spend money on that. They didn't have that capacity. Ukraine was using the Buk M1 and M2 systems, which are obsolete and older, but effective against civilian aircraft, I guess. Ukraine can't afford anything else. But so was, Romania and Bulgaria and everybody else in the area, and Belarus, all was using these cheaper, poor man's method. Now, the French press is saying, the Russian military shot down this plane. I just yelled at a French reporter just recently, just a few hours ago. He says in the article, well, no one knows who shot it, but the headline says Russian military shot down the plane. I said, this is a call for war here, and you're lying. You know that's not true. You say it's not true. So this is just another version of the Lusitania.
Well, that's the same as what the Dutch investigator is saying, isn't he? He's saying Russia did this, but we haven't actually got any evidence. I mean, he's even gone one step further and said, well, we can tell it was actually the 53rd Division that did this. And how do they tell that from the bits that fell off the plane?
We know that, yeah.
Fingerprints? Where is the evidence? There is none whatsoever. And this is being reported as if this has just happened yesterday, this investigation. And yet it was 2 years back. So they're deliberately just bringing it into the public's eye again, so that they can try and, it's this Russia, isn't it? It's this anti-Russianism that Sergei Lavrov speaks about, like anti-Semitism. They're now talking about Russophobia. That's it, isn't it? That's the new word, Russophobia, that they've started using.
Since the early 90s, I've been saying that Russia is the battlement against the New World Order. That's what it is. And it wasn't, of course, that way at the time, but I knew it would be. It is the enemy. And now with Russia's new carrier crusher missile, the U.S. Navy is now obsolete. The carriers are obsolete. That's why no one's really investing in it anymore, except the U.S. The U.S. can't win this war, but there's no unity in the American executive branch. Trump is out of his element. And unfortunately, it makes this cancellation makes the U.S. look awful, unstable, explosive. North Korea looks pretty good by comparison.
Well, I would say both Russia and North Korea have to be doing something right to be in the target range that they are. And I would say, you know, a large part of that is because they are both very patriotic countries. And as we said, North Korea is, you know, very ethno-nationalist. They're not just patriotic, they're ethno-nationalist. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. I think that was a really good conversation, very enlightening for our listeners. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with Florian Geyer. God bless and hail victory. We'll be right back.